Well, Catherine, we're at the end of the launch. And first of all, congratulations. Everybody here is speaking about not all, how the standard is so high. Academically, the presentation is wonderful. So congratulations to you on your fifth publication.
Thank you very much, Mary. I'm delighted.
Anyway, the question I have to ask is, did you fall in love with Nimmo?
Did I fall in love with Nimmo? Nimmo actually was a workaholic. And I don't think he would have much time for women. He never married. Anything else I know nothing about, but he was so devoted to his work that I don't think he would have even noticed if I was there. So wouldn't it have been a waste of time? But does that ever stop a woman?
And just, I know, I mean, there's been a lot of talk today about his, I suppose, genius in terms of being an engineer. But what do we know about his life, his personal life?
He was Scottish. He started life as a school teacher. He was very well educated, but mostly he was self-educated. And then when he came back to Ireland, it was to move out of teaching completely and to take up a job with the Bog Commission. And he had started doing some work already in Scotland as a surveyor and then as an engineer, because they were building a huge amount of roads in Scotland near his area, and they were all under the direction of Thomas Telford, who was a very famous Scottish engineer. And he was influenced by Telford, and Telford actually got him the job over here in Ireland afterwards.
And where did he live when he was doing this work in Connemara or the Western District?
Well, the Western District was from Sligo Bay to Galway Bay, so it was a very big area. I know that in Connemara we like to think that Nimmo was Connemara and nothing else, but in actual fact, he wouldn't have seen it that way. Connemara was just a very small part of what he was. And I suppose it is indicative of the man in the sense that when he was dealing with a project, he gave it so much of his attention that afterwards you assume that that was what he was interested in. But in actual fact, he gave every other part and every other topic that he dealt with the same attention. So he lived in Dublin. He had a residence in Dublin. It was also used as an office for the head office for the Western District. And he had built a place in Leenane, a storeroom and also a building for housing the staff. And he had also built MAM. More so as a private building, but then he had built stores and workhouses, not workshops, I should say, in Roundstone as well. But you couldn't say he lived anywhere. He lived in Dublin, and then when he was travelling around, he stayed in different places. But even looking at the addresses on his documents, when the letters that he was sending to Dublin Castle, he travelled all the time. He would be in one place one day and another place the next day. He was always on the go.
And what sort of reports were there from contemporaries about what he was like to work with?
You got the feeling that there weren't that many coming from his staff, not that they've survived that I found anyway, but you got the feeling that from the few that I did find that there's a huge amount of respect for him. One of them who was directly under him was Patrick Knight, and he was the engineer in charge of the roads up around Mayo, and he wrote a book afterwards called Erris and the Highlands, and it was very soon after Nimmo's death, and he was very fond of Nimmo. You can see the affection. A lot of the young engineers were trained by him, so they would have seen him. He was obviously, having started life, I suppose, as a school teacher, he was probably the ideal man for training them. So he was head of a big pyramid of engineers and workers and contractors and all sorts of things going on. And I cover all of that, and I name as many of them as possible in the book. And I explain that he was just the top man of a huge, huge organisation.
And in the book, Catherine, you refer to the period that he was in the Connemara area, that there was a famine during that period. I mean, we always think of the famine being in the 1840s, but obviously there were famines prior to that.
Well, the famine that I talk about in that case is 1822. It was a very short famine in comparison with the one that followed later, but it was vital. But also, it was almost like as if it was the starting point for works that were carried on during the main famine, the big famine, the great famine. It was the beginning of the public works, and it was the beginning of sort of the charitable organisations and the fundraising outside the country for the famine. So things happened very quickly there, and a lot of money was put into the West, so they recovered very quickly. But yet, you see, the main reason they recovered was that the next year they had a good season, whilst in the Great Famine you had several years of poor harvest and crop failure, and that's what was such a disaster at that time, because it was continuous. Was in the 1822 one, by 1823 things had improved, so the money took effect right away.
And just describe for us, just briefly, what kind of, say, Roundstone or North Connemara generally, what would conditions have been like when he arrived here?
Well, I was very lucky to uncover a map that's inside in Galway in the county library in there, and it's 1819, so it predates Nimmo. So it shows very clearly what roads were in place before Nimmo arrived, and I've reproduced sections of that map at the time, and it is really it shows you that the roads that what is now our Western Way and the Boreens, they were already in existence. And in some cases, what is now the roads that we use were in existence, but they were very poor roads. They didn't go in the same route that they go in today. What Nimmo did was he brought them down to low ground. He built bridges over rivers. He built, you know, he improved the roads. He widened them, put much better quality coverage on them, surfaces on them. And so it meant that you got much better quality road. You know, it's interesting to see that the routes actually went in the same direction, but just Nimmo improved on them.
And just on that, Kathleen, what age was he when he died?
He was only 49. What had happened was that I think myself that he had started to have very poor health from about 1828, and the last couple of years he didn't keep his eye on the ball in the West, and he also other interests were taking his attention. He was very interested in railways, so he was doing a lot of work out of the country, but he was also spending a lot of work out of the country in sort of places that where they would have been spas, which were good for arthritis, and he had very bad arthritis. So I think it was a combination of that and the combination of the fact that the government really wanted to stop spending money, and then they wanted to bring the whole thing into some sort of better control than it was in. So this is what it was, a combination of things, but I tried to explain that as clearly as possible in the book.
And my final question, Kathleen, is that you mentioned that he was being credited with founding Roundstone Village. Is that accurate?
Yes, it is, because there was a tenant here that held the land when he started to build the pier here in 1822, but there were tenants on other sites as well, and it wouldn't interfere with the, you know, the tenants would still be in possession of the land afterwards. But what happened in this case was that the pier ran into difficulty with the contractor, and the job went on longer, you know, the usual story, and the tenant was looking for compensation for damage done to his land during the construction of the pier. And he was only a tenant of Thomas Martin. Thomas Martin would have been the landlord. And so Nimmo decided that it would be cheaper to actually buy him out of his lease than pay him the compensation he was looking for. So he did that. And then when the lease came up for renewal, he took it over directly from Thomas Martin himself. And so he stripped it up, he divided it up into lots and put it up for rent. And he left it under the sort of guidance of his brother, John Nimmo, who then developed the town. It was under the two of them that the village started to develop.
And if you want to find out more, people really have to buy this book. It really is very attractive. The exact title, Kathleen, is?
Alexander Nimmo in the Western District, and it costs €25 and available in all your local bookshops.
Exactly. And I have to ask, I know that's, I said that was the final question, but this is the final question. Have you another subject that you're currently researching?
I definitely have to go back and rewrite the history of Clifton. I definitely have to do that, and I want to start that, but I'm going to take about a year off. But there are other things that have interested me, but I find you have a long list in your head, and you know you'll come to them eventually, God willing, and health and mind staying in shape. There'll always be projects. There'll always be something to write about.
And all your projects are Connemara based, aren't they?
Yeah, because you put so much work into them, you have to be absolutely fanatical about them. And I couldn't find myself getting interested in anything beyond. But having said that, now this book takes me up as far as Sligo and Roscommon, and you know, so I have gone a bit further with this time. But I would just want to just improve on what I've done, basically.
Well, again, Kathleen, congratulations, and thank you very much for talking to us.
Thank you.